Hi, welcome to another of our Coffee Time Chats. Today we're joined by Michael Goldrick, Chief Experience Officer at the Hotels Network. In this discussion, Michael does a bit of future gazing, looking at what hoteliers should consider in relation to the customer journey. Additionally, he touches on how hotels should be leveraging the direct booking desire and outlines three digital marketing trends all hotels should keep an eye out for, namely trip stacking, invisible friction, and bench marketing. Really hope you enjoy the discussion. Let's get started. Hi, Michael. Good to see you. Thanks for joining us on one of our coffee times. How are you? You well?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me, Trevor. I appreciate it.
Excellent. No problem at all. We're going to go down a couple of discussion points through this chat. One's going to be a bit more future looking. And then one is going to be picking up on a recent article that you've just written. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. But before we get into some of the meat of the subject, you've got a really interesting background, having just taken on a new role with the Hotels Network, coming out of the hotelier side with boutique lifestyle and then business hotels as well. So before we kick off, how about we start off with just a bit of an introduction from you? Tell us who and what you're all about.
Sure, definitely. So I think, so who am I? I think to understand me, maybe is to understand things that kind of drive me. Mm-hmm. Very curious. Like typically I'd be the one asking questions instead of the one answering questions. I like to solve problems and I like to help people. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, naturally, I think the hotel industry fit that, but how did I get into the hotel industry in the first place? Well, I was actually in a PhD program at Northwestern on business communications. And back then, I saw this thing called, it was called the Information Superhighway before it was the internet. And I'm looking at this and I said, this is actually what I want to do. I don't want to be talking about this stuff. I want to do this. And at that time, Anderson Consulting came to campus, the pre-Accenture. And I asked them, are you going to do anything with the internet? And they said, we're thinking about it. So I signed up and I joined them. I was with them for a number of years. And then I had a kid and I didn't want to travel so much. So I wanted to find a job that would have less traveling. And Starwood was down the street from where I lived, Starwood Hotel Group. And actually, this is a funny story, actually, how I got into it. Is I found this job that was perfect. It was Global Web Services team building out the large .brand.com site, Sheraton, Westin, all those. Mm-hmm. So I applied on the job site. But back then, it seemed like the site was glitching. Yeah. I would submit it, but I wouldn't get anything back. Wasn't sure if it went through. So, but I knew this job was perfect for me. So I put on my interview suit, got my resume, and I just went to the lobby of Starwood and I told them I'm here for my 2 o'clock interview. And I just sat down and so the reception said, well, who are you here to see? I'm like, HR just told me to be here at 2 o'clock. So the receptionist called the HR. They came down like, who are you here to see? And I said, I'm sorry, I didn't get the name, but they said, come here at 2 o'clock. So they brought down another HR person. And I said, you know what, when you guys get it all straightened out, give me a call back. Here's my resume. They called me back the next day. I got the job. So that's actually how I got into hotels.
Story.
Yeah. So, but from then I, went from large brands from Starwood, smaller brands like Dolce Hotels that actually ended up getting purchased by Wyndham. Mm-hmm. And work all those typically on the digital side, usually connecting the brands in digital. And then most recently, I was at Club Quarters running their digital and marketing. And then the pandemic happened. And there was a company that I was working with called the Hotels Network that they really were helping me a lot because my staff was furloughed, eventually laid off. So it was just me doing all the marketing. I had a reduced budget and I just needed help. And their tools actually and their team helped me drive more conversions with my reduced budget, as well as I also had to do a lot of targeted messaging regarding COVID and regarding our promotions and new programs. So it allowed me to do that. So once our hotels opened and we started going again, I reached out to them and I said, you know, you guys are great. You think you got a spot for a guy like me? Because at this point, I'd been in the hotel industry for about 20 years, and I was ready for a change. I think, you know, that's part of what the Great Resignation is all about, ready for a change. And they said, well, what do you think you would bring? I said, you know what? I could be the voice of the customer in your company. Mm-hmm. I could speak to your marketing team. I could work with marketing. I could work with sales. I could work with product. I can work with your client service team and partnerships and just represent the voice of the customer, which is the hotels. And they said, okay, let's do that. So that's what I do.
And so what's your title?
I'm the Chief Experience Officer. Chief Experience Officer. Yes, it's all about the experience. Yeah. And really, it's to help elevate the brand, mm-hmm. elevate the company. I was one of the first people in the United States. They're a global company. They're in 100 plus countries. We have over 12,000 hotels at this point. And they have team all around the world, but really we're looking, directing on the United States right now. So since I've joined, we've had about 3 or 4 other people in the States join as well. So we see this as a big opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. And what was it? I mean, you were using them as a, obviously one of their customers. And as you say, okay, we fancy to change. What was it about what they were doing, where they were coming from, their actual solution that made you just look and say, hey, that's something I would want to be interested in being part of?
Well, there's a couple of things. So I wasn't responsible for all the marketing. So I had to get things up quickly. And so their tools allowed me to get messaging up quickly. I also wanted to not show the same messages to everybody based on their location. So I was targeting either the staycation people, the work from hotel people, people that are coming for the weekend versus the week. So I needed to pivot my messaging.
Yeah.
So their tools allowed me to easily do that, which was really helpful. I think that the customer service there was amazing. I would send an email and I'd get a response back, if not same day, the next day. So the customer service, they were always very much team oriented. Mm-hmm. So I felt, even though I wasn't on their team, when I was at the club quarters, I'm like, you know, how can I help you guys? so they said, well, you know, we're launching, this was back in last year, like, well, we're launching this new benchmarking tool called Bench Direct. It's an alpha. And I said, yeah, let me demo it. Let me try it out. Let me provide feedback. So they showed it to me. So I felt included in their process. And I provided some my thoughts, which I think they took some of my suggestions. And I'm not sure, actually, but I gave them some of my thoughts. And, they're very collaborative, which I like.
That's good. So what do you think are some of the areas where hoteliers need to just be watching, keeping an eye on, maybe tapping into in a little bit more than they have done so far?
Oh, that's
a big question. Sorry.
Yeah, that's a big question. The so last week we had our sales conference, and I was taking the company through the kind of the customer journey and how a typical customer will research a place that they don't know. So mm-hmm. I was in Barcelona, so I was saying, imagine you go to New York. What's the process? How you start with the OTAs? You filter it down based on location, and then you kind of do your research. I think what the hotels need to think about is how to capture the people that when they're doing their research and before they start the booking, how do the hotels capture those people that are sort of in that part of the buyer's journey? And I think the other thing is data, as you're talking about data. And typically, I would use Google Analytics to look at, okay, what are the pages in which people are looking at? Which are my pages that are converting? And I'd always look year over year. Mm-hmm. So, but now, you know, these days, year over year, the data is not very helpful mm-hmm. Just because times are unusual. So the best way to really get a benchmark of how well you're doing is to look at similar types of hotels and the local destination. Mm-hmm. So I think, and we're going to get into...
Just pick up when you're talking benchmark, and we're not talking benchmarking like from a revenue point of view and star reports.
Right.
We're looking at it from a web perspective. Is that what you're meaning?
Yeah, totally from a web perspective. So you can see from a demand benchmarking, like, are you getting your fair share of demand? Like, mm-hmm. are you being effective in that? You could also look at it from a booking perspective or even the conversion. Because if you think about it, every hotel has a monthly goal that they need to meet in terms of revenue. Mm-hmm. And you have that monthly meeting at, you know, looking at the previous month and when the entire team, if it's a brand or if it's a hotel management, say it's hotel management company. And the hotel has to kind of report in on the results. And if you didn't hit the target, you got to justify why. Why haven't you hit your numbers? And I think you might have certain KPIs that might seem aggressive, which you haven't hit. But if you're able to look at your competitor hotels and say, well, we did better, although we didn't hit our numbers, they did worse than we did, so we're not totally doing something wrong.
Yeah.
I think benchmarking from that perspective is very helpful. It kind of gives context. Yeah. It's like a full 360 view, but looking at the direct channel, having that kind of measure, I think is very helpful.
And you were talking, I just want to pick up on something that you said a moment ago as well, at the beginning, when you were talking about, you know, when people are first on that journey, and trying to capture the people when they're first kind of exploring, thinking. What leans into that? What helps that? How do you go about doing that? I mean, that's a challenge everyone wants to deal with, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. So, there are ways to know. Like, the more you know a person when they're coming to your site, the mm-hmm. better. So if you can message to them, if they're coming from outside of the country, for example, you can identify, if you're United States and someone's coming to your website from, say, Canada, saying a message about Canadians, it's like, Canadians are always welcome here or something like that. You want to do messaging that is personal but not creepy.
Yeah.
You know, like you can know a lot about them, but you want to keep it general enough. But the other thing that is being able to identify intent. Mm-hmm. If people are coming to your site, and if you have a way to identify if somebody is a low and less likely to purchase versus high likely to purchase, because if you assume, say, 3% of the people come to your site buy. Mm-hmm. The other 97% aren't.
Yep.
Right. So 3%, if you can understand, separate them out when they come to the site and kind of say, okay, this might be part of the 97% versus the 3%. And then you can message that 97% a little bit differently and convert them. That can make a huge difference. So any way to do stuff like that, I think, is very helpful.
And I think a lot of what you're talking about there is obviously, and I think this is where the focus for the hotels network is, their focus is all around direct. It's all about your website. And we're going to talk a little bit later about some of the specifics that you think are some of the slightly easier wins of what you can do. But I mean, that is a trend that's been spoken about for years. Everyone moans about the OTAs. Everyone talks about direct. Probably happened a lot more. Maybe the pandemic has pushed us towards focusing, because we don't want to be spending what money we don't have on paying commissions and driving directly.
Yeah.
Where do you see that fitting in with also the consumer, the guest, and their where they're viewing and how they're viewing? And I guess I'm layering a few things in here, but back to your point, if I'm thinking of traveling to New York, I'm not thinking about a specific hotel at that moment in time. I'm thinking about where I want to go, the destination. How do you kind of try and pull those pieces together? You know, the destination, they're dreaming about it, they want to be going direct. How do you leverage those elements?
Yeah, no, I think you have to work with, a hotel needs to work with companies that, like, say, not to mention brand names, but like the Sojourns or the G-Commerces of the world, mm-hmm. where they can identify people in terms of traffic acquisition, people that have demonstrated an intent to come to your area. Mm-hmm. So you really want to partner with companies that can, you just don't want to buy traffic. You want to buy qualified traffic, and buying qualified traffic of people that are intent to come in, that's the way to do it. Because when I was going through onboarding the other day, and I was explaining to people that just joined my company about digital marketing, who didn't know anything about digital marketing, I'm telling you, you've got the unbranded words. Mm-hmm. Where if you're like a hotel, like say your hotel is in Bryant Park, if you search Bryant Park, who's going to show up? Do you or do you not want to buy these terms for the hotel? And it said it all really depends on your budget. Because mm-hmm. then I said, let's say you take it down a notch and you move further down the funnel and say, you know what? I want to go to Park Terrace Hotel. And that's the hotel that you decided you want. It's right on Bryant Park. You talk to whoever you're traveling with. They say, that's great. So then I showed the people I was taking through the training. I say, you put in Park Terrace Hotel. And I said, look at how it shows up. You have Park Terrace Hotel ad, because they bought their name. Then you have Expedia, who's bought their name. Yeah. Then you have Booking.com, that's bought their name. And then you have the organic listing, which is like fourth from the top.
Yeah.
And I said, had Park Terrace not bought that first one at the top, most people click the first link that they see, and that would go straight to the Expedia.
Yeah.
So Expedia would ultimately win the booking, regardless of how well they've done their search.
Yeah.
Because, so I think in terms of hotels, they got to play in all these different parts, or else if they don't have the budget, it's ultimately the bookings won't go direct. And, yeah. As we all know, it's like 15 to 20% commission for a booking that goes there. So it behooves the hotels to participate and try to shift as much from DAs. Be that as it may, if there's an urgent need, sometimes the OTAs are an important partner to the hotels. So it isn't just us versus them. No. There is a partnership.
Yeah. But it sounds like you're right, and it's right to highlight that, because otherwise it sounds like the same old battle that's always gone on, battling against the OTAs for that direct. But they perform a function. There is a sense of business, a source of business that they can drive to you. But I think what was interesting, you used a phrase there, kind of shifting, shifting that demand to your hotel, because there's only a certain amount of people that are going to be coming into your destination. And what you're doing is you're battling for that business to bring it to your hotel. But back to your point that you said earlier, it's also about being able to target and work out who are the people of all that demand that's coming in that actually is relevant to you, that you want to convert. Did I understand that right?
Yeah, you want to bring in qualified traffic. You just don't want, you've got vanity metrics.
Yeah.
And they, sometimes you go and report it, like how many people have gone to your website.
Yeah.
Well, I can increase the number of people coming to my website, but when I was on the hotel side, but that's sort of a fool's errand if it isn't people that are going to actually, hopefully, they will buy.
Yeah.
That skews all the metrics. Unless you're just trying to generate awareness. So it all depends on what your goals are. I mean, certain well-known hotels have a huge advantage of brand awareness, but for newer hotels that are independents that no one's heard about, I mean, there is it's a constant struggle. How do you get their name out there?
Yeah.
How do you get them to be aware? Do you go onto social media? you work with your influencers, but typically the only way you could do it is you just got to buy, you got to invest heavily and paying a lot of like prospecting and make as much noise as you can.
And there's a lot that's going on at the moment. I mean, we're certainly seeing it in the UK, lots of discussions about how different regions or different key destinations, you know, because of the staycation, they didn't have to do as much before because right. everybody in the UK kind of knew where to go. Now they're having to ramp up their right. the destination marketing to reach a more back to the international audience. But also now they realize that the people that came to them before are now maybe going to think about going abroad. Is there ways that, how can hotels be, you know, looking going forward? Are there ways that hotels can be tying into what work is going in around destination marketing and things in that area?
Yeah, no, there are definitely things. So like, for example, like our company has just come out with a recent solution just all about the destinations. Mm-hmm. So it's a tool where, say, you're looking at New York, you can compare New York against London, you can compare New York against Chicago, mm-hmm. or you have a smaller destination, you know, you can really select whatever destination you want and look at another destination and see how you're doing in terms of conversions, revenue. Typically how a hotel could kind of look at their metrics, but it's actually at the destination level.
Okay.
So this is really helpful to understand who's coming in, who's converting, what is the demand that's coming in. So from a destination perspective, you can say, okay, well, we're doing better or something needs to be improved. And that's where you work with the DMO or the CVB to see what they can do to help raise some awareness if your overall destination isn't doing as well.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. So, I mean, one of the challenges that exist, if we're looking a bit more tactical now, is that the cost of media to attract new visitors is going up. So if hotels keep their budgets pretty flat as it was, then I guess it follows that their traffic will go down. If they increase their budgets in line with the higher costs, then okay, traffic is only going to stay the same relatively, but now it's more expensive. So then logically it follows that the best way, I guess, to drive more revenue, generate higher ROIs with flatter budgets is to focus on what happens when you actually get them to your website. And I think that's what kind of leans into your recent article about the top 9 digital marketing trends to drive bookings and revenue. And you picked out 3 kind of key points, and we can expand on more if there's others, but you picked up something called trip stacking, then remove the invisible friction, and then bench marketing, not benchmarking, but bench marketing. So let's trip stacking. Tell us about
Yeah. So trip stacking, actually, a lot of people, I heard about this term at the end of last year, and a lot of people seem to do it, but didn't actually even realize it has a name. So it is a way for the customer, the traveler, to create vacation certainty.
Okay.
So what is trip stacking? So trip stacking is like, for example, if you are planning a trip abroad, but then something happens, say with COVID, and at the destination they change their quarantine rules, well then you're out of a trip. Mm-hmm. So you're stuck there. So what people have started to do is they've booked multiple vacations for the same dates. So essentially, they're stacking their trips.
Stacking up their layers of, right, okay.
Now, there's a caveat is you don't want to get stuck. You want to make sure that they're all cancelable. Yeah. So you're not stuck with these things. But, you know, so people are booking staycations or further domestic travel that requires airfare so they can make sure that they go somewhere. Because you usually got one shot at a vacation when the kids are out of school.
Yeah.
And you want to make sure you can go somewhere.
So that sounds like it's the advantage of the traveler. That sounds like a nightmare if you're the hotelier.
Right. So that's right. So I was thinking, well, if you're on the hotel side, well, how do you know if you've been trip stacked?
Yeah.
So I was thinking, you know, if you look at the typical booking window that you have, if you see some of them are a bit longer than typical, mm-hmm. or you see spikes, it's possible you're being trip stacked. And a way to possibly counteract that, or to move you from, say, your second choice to first choice, is to layer in an experience, almost like an experience. Hopefully that's non-cancelable. I was looking at this new site called Peak, which is basically like Airbnb type way that you can book lodging, but it's basically you can book different types of experiences.
Okay, yep.
And I thought, well, that'd be interesting if I was a hotel and in my pre-stay, say, you know, you're coming to stay with us, you know, we have a lot of interesting activities. Plus, here, take a look at even other activities you can participate. Here's a link. So any way that you can kind of entice them and kind of get them more connected to your location and your destination,
yeah.
is more likely to move you up to be the premier choice.
The second one is the one that really winds me up as a consumer. So when we're talking about removing invisible friction, and I know you're going to talk about it, but just from my point of view, I can't believe this stuff still goes on with hotels in 2022. I mean, it's just ludicrous. So talk to us about the invisible friction.
Well, I mean, I was just looking at it. So you have different types of invisible friction. This is friction that is prevents people from booking for one reason or another. So I was just looking at the metrics for the UK and in the United States, looking at overall conversion of desktop versus mobile on hotel websites. And there's a factor of about a 2% difference.
Right.
It's like, and the reason for this, from what I understand, is on mobile, is you kind of get, you know, mobile is used for research, but also even though mobile is creating a far greater share of the amount of searches that are being done for the hotel site, but when you get to that last sort of page, you know, where you have to put in all your personal identifiable information, mm-hmm. you have to do it with your thumbs if it isn't been remembered. And then you got to pull out a credit card and then you kind of think, is this secure? you're looking for the little lock on, yeah. on the URL. And then, you know, it's a pain. So there's challenges there with the mobile. So I think the way to improve that is to bypass that and, you know, have buttons where, whether it's buy now, pay later, and having those types of thing linked in, or having Apple Pay and Google Pay kind of linked in. And you know, some of the bigger booking engines, they don't have that integrated right now into the flow. Like I remember two companies ago where there was this one, two hotel companies ago where I was working at, a company came to me and said, you know, we can do this for you in terms of the booking flow, but it would take people out of the flow. So like yeah. if I hit it, then I said, go over to their site and transact and bring me back, which would allow me to add Apple Pay, Google Pay to the flow. But the problem is it would break my attribution. Mm-hmm. So if someone had come in through paid search, I would never see if they actually converted because yeah. the flow is broken yeah. like that. But now we're seeing some companies that are being able to add a layer to do that for the full flow. So companies like that should, in theory, help reduce some of this friction by taking out the need to do the credit card. Mm-hmm. And I think the other part of the invisible friction that's impacting is the latest sort of Google update and how sites are indexed.
Yeah.
And I think the friction is speed. Yeah, a lot of hotel websites are a little bit heavy, mm-hmm. May not be as nimble. And now Google is starting to penalize those sites that don't have a speed of, I think it's like 2.5 seconds.
Yeah, kind of there, isn't it? It's
the whole yeah. thing. So it's that is the friction of the sites that are really, the slower you are, they're less likely to even be visible to the person that's searching. And Rand Fishkind, he did an analysis of like zero click search. So when people are searching now, even they may even get to your website, because 60% or whatever the number is that he has, it's a big number, are able to get their answer right on the first search engine result page that Google delivers up. So they may never even get to the hotel website. So you want to make sure that you are do everything you can to be indexed so you can be that top organic listing, or else they may never see it.
That makes sense. And I guess the page load speed is something that a hotelier can do something about fairly quickly by just, you know, there's plenty of providers out there that could probably take care of it and get that resolved. The invisible payment bit is maybe a bit challenging, but it surprises me that, you know, Google Pay, Apple Pay is so straightforward. I mean, I was in a supermarket the other day, and the guy was paying off his Apple Watch, you know, in one of our big major supermarkets. I mean, it's a simple thing that they do. It's surprising that the booking engines don't have that integrated in.
Yeah, I don't have an explanation.
and on the third one, now benchmarking. Tell us about that.
So benchmarking, the concept, and we were talking about benchmarking before, is leveraging the data that you have, your benchmark data, and then to leverage it. So to me, I kind of see this data as a hammer and shield. It's a shield, as I talked about before, in terms of KPIs, to know how well you're doing against the competitors. So when you're reporting back in, if you didn't hit your numbers, they say, well, the competitors aren't doing as well. But it's a hammer to allow you, if you can see that your competitors might be weaker in a certain area where you're stronger, you can, you know, invest heavier into that area and grow that advantage even higher. So when you have benchmark data, you can kind of see from a demand perspective how well you're doing, in booking perspective, where people are coming from. You have a lot of different ways to look at who's coming to you versus who's going to your approximate destination to even sort of look like hotels. And you can say where you can do one of two things. You can either double down on where you're strong and get stronger, or you can say, okay, well, actually, here's an area that I'm not as strong. Maybe I'll shift my dollars there to kind of pull up the areas where there might be opportunities in my marketing. But sometimes that might require some other investment that may make that prohibitive. So to me, I think the best advantage of benchmarking is to find out the areas that you're strong and just go deeper and invest there, because you have a finite budget. So you want to really exploit that to the best possible.
That makes sense. And what's going on? You mentioned earlier that you used to look a lot at Google Analytics. And you know, there's some changes going on that side of things at the moment. Is there any kind of tips you can give in that area?
Yeah. So Google is rolling out a new version of Google Analytics. So before it was called Universal. Mm-hmm. Now they call it G4. Mm-hmm. And what this is they're changing how they collect data. So before it was, you have sessions and events, and they would capture it in different ways. In the new version, everything's just events.
Yeah.
So everything is being tracked as discrete events. And it's still in beta right now, but I think that everyone should download it now and run it in parallel. Mm-hmm. And just learn how it works, and you want it to start to collect the data. You don't want to make it your primary one yet, because it's still in beta, so you don't want to replace your Universal Analytics yet.
Sure.
But I think it's coming. So I think this is an opportunity for everyone to really understand how Google is seeing analytics changing in the future, and then look the ways to exploit that as well, to see areas where you're doing well and areas where there are opportunities.
Well, I hope that conversation was of interest, and thanks again to Michael for joining us. If you have any thoughts or views on this discussion, please feel free to reach out. We value your input, and we're happy to follow up with our guests. Also, if there are any topics that particularly interest you, or if there are any specific guests you would like to hear from, please do let us know. You can reach us via our social channels, or you can email us via insights@revenue-hub.com. That's insights at revenue-hub.com. And if you like what we're producing, please do subscribe through the podcast channel you're listening to. If you want to see the interview, you can find it on the Revenue Hub YouTube channel, and the link is in the podcast notes. And if you do watch it on YouTube, it would be great if you could give it a thumbs up or even subscribe, as it really helps out the channel. Anyway, until next time, thanks for listening.